Stephen McGee once said, "You have the illusion of elections, and we, the corporations, we purchase the elected government through lobbying and donations." Keep this in mind as we discuss today the role of lobbyists in not only in the political sphere, but our daily life and what it means to you. My name is Dr. David Waralu.
And my name is Dr. Ross Stewart.
And you are watching Geopolitics in Conflict. Do you want an even deeper understanding of what's going on in the world around you? There are many things that we can't get into here in these short videos. But on our membership at geopoliticsinconflict.com, we get into some of the deepest and most pressing issues happening in the world around you.
There we have deep dive presentations where you can ask questions live, have conversations with us and each other on our private members chat. And we often have surprise bonuses just for you.
So, if you want an even deeper understanding of what's happening around you, check out our membership at geopoliticsinconflict.com.
Our topic today, David, is lobbyists. Would you care to guess how many there are in Washington today?
Oh, I'd like to know.
12,000.
Wow.
What does that break down to for every legislator?
Well, if we have to, probably 7-9 each, since there are 535 members, and you do the math, basically.
Well, it's a really small budget for them, though. It's only $115 billion that the lobbyists control and use to influence our Congress and legislature.
Yeah, well, the role of lobbying, I mean, this is a conversation that it can be sort of managed so quickly, because the reason why, we have to understand the role of lobbying in the American system. And the reason why we wanted to talk about this today is to highlight that lobbying, this is, by the way, is not limited just to the American political system. This is around the world.
Yeah, so if you're a citizen of the world, this applies to you.
To you as well. Yeah, that was the whole idea. But there is the conversation that is lobbying considered as a form of freedom of speech?
Which is a real consideration.
Yeah, and that was the same argument that was made back at the beginning of the United States. And the beginning of the United States was the idea of special interest groups. And the argument back then was that, well, if you have only the powerful that have a say, what about those without a voice? And this is where the role of special interest that can advocate for the interests of the less well-connected individuals. And that was the arguments of where lobbying was based on. Except things have took a different turn altogether.
And it's not that some of those lobbyists don't really support the American people, because some do. I mean, they really are looking out for the well-being of the American people. But we have the other side of this coin as well.
Well, that was the idea of nowadays we're talking about a different ball game altogether.
Oh, yeah.
Because here's the thing. And if you happen to be an American watching this, I am sure you have wondered, are there any lobbyists for homelessness? You know, most likely not. And the reason being is there is no money in it.
Right.
But if you look at other industries, you're going to realize how powerful lobbyists are.
What about medical?
Yeah, that will be one. That will be big tech. That will be agricultural lobbyists for agricultural stuff. That will be pharmaceutical. That is part of it. Defense contractors. You know, all those lobbying entities advocate for the interest of whomever hire them.
And it's not that this is all one-sided in terms of, do the lobbyists actually provide some worthwhile information? Do they have some real economic experts on their staff? And at the same time, do they exclude the best interest of really the entire American population? So there's a bigger balancing act going on here than it would first appear.
Exactly. Why? Because lobbyists are not your average Joe or average Jane. Just for you to know, a lobbyist is someone who is very well informed about policies. somebody who understands the legislative process, and some of them have even been former members of Congress, in our case here in the United States. You know, once they've done their job in Congress or not re-elected, whatever, what is the next stop is becoming a lobbyist, because they have developed relationships
exactly
over time, and that works to their benefits in pushing the agenda one direction or another.
They also, because they've been involved in the government in some capacity, by and large, mm-hmm. they understand how to make things happen. And some of these people have been a lobbyist for 20 or 30 years. They have a lot of relationships.
Exactly. Because here is the bottom line to the purpose of lobbying. It all sums up in one word. No. I teach government, so I kind of explain it to my students in that setting. And the one word is influence.
Clearly.
Yeah, because that's the whole objective. Lobbyists are there to influence government policies. Now, whether it will be to your direction or will be to your benefit, that's a subject for another conversation altogether. Because what lobbyists are after, they are after who hired them to begin with.
Right.
And this is why our regulation here in the United States, that if you want to become a lobbyist, you have to be registered. You know, this is why if you lobby for a foreign government or whatever, you have to register with the Justice Department. That's just our process. But we're not here to talk about the administrative process of it. We're here to talk about the how much lobbying has become now sort of a part of the American political system, to the point that it's on over the border of corruption, if we may use the term, because we'll use the term for it. And because it became far beyond what is expected of lobbyists to do.
You know, I came across this definition mm-hmm. that might be worth reading out loud.
Sure.
Bribery is considered an effort to buy power. Pay the recipient for an agreed-upon outcome. Lobbying is considered an effort to influence power, mostly through contributions. What's the difference?
Wow. That is you're absolutely correct. Right? Well, this one takes me back to 2009 Supreme Court decision.
Oh, that one.
Yeah. That decision by which unlimited contributions can be...
From corporations, because corporations are... Individuals.
Yeah. So I think, and I am not a law expert. I have no saying to that. But to me, it just didn't make sense at all. Because you open up this floodgate now for unlimited amount of money. You know, and there are those who argue, and I understand the arguments for those who argue that, well, you can look at lobbying as a form of freedom of speech. Yeah, and one may say, how so? One will answer, well, if we have freedom of speech in terms of words, we could have freedom of speech in terms of monetary donations. And that was the argument that Saf had made.
I watched it as it occurred in 2009, mm-hmm. and I'm going, it took my breath away.
Yeah. Well, it's because it becomes the question of, if you happen to be a billionaire, okay? And I happen to be an average citizen. Okay. Who do you think will have more influence?
Let's try the oligarchs. Let's try the billionaires.
Yeah, because that's what it will be. So if we are to say, well, if lobbying is a part of or a form of a freedom of speech, in other words, well, how come my freedom of speech is not expressed? Because I don't have the monetary means by which to express that. And this is, to me, where the danger is.
You know, something you and I have talked about over and over again, mm-hmm. can a legislator economically survive without contributions from lobbyists?
Do you want the short answer?
Let's give the short.
No. That is the short answer. And it is sad enough to know that is the norm now in Congress, in our U.S. Congress. And this is why, once again, I'll bring it up. I am a believer of term limits.
Oh, boy.
I don't care how great of a legislator you are. You serve a term limit that has to be agreed upon by them, the legislative body, you know, with the input from the citizens, whether, for example, members of the House of Representatives will serve, let's say, 5 terms, because each term is 2 years, and it's only fair. And this is just a suggestion, you know, 5 terms for the House of Representatives, and you can do, let's say, 2 or 3 max terms for a senator, because a senator term is 6 years. You don't need to be there for 35 years.
Or longer.
Or longer. So that was the arguments for why you have the lobbyists managing Congress. And the role of a member of Congress would become what? I got to think about next re-election.
And how much of their time is spent pandering to the people who are going to give them donations? Another reasonable question to ask.
Yeah.
As opposed to taking care of business.
Yeah. Or take care of the interest of your constituents, because those the one who sent you to Congress to begin with. I think it will be fair to say that I cannot judge everybody. And who am I to judge? I can't. I'm just saying or speaking out loud here. The idea of members of Congress might have lost touch with reality as far as where the common man interests are.
I would qualify that as an understatement.
You're the psychologist. You will know better.
Well,
and if you can provide some explanation, Ross, psychologically,
yeah,
that would be great.
From what we can tell, these people seem to live in a bubble.
Yeah.
And they get into groupthink and group agreement and disregard facts. And we see over and over and over again really remarkably inappropriate decisions being made that many people have much better information than Congress seems to have. How much do we need to explore what the impact of printing over way, 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 way too much money and being in deficit? How many families could survive with heavy, heavy debt? And what does it mean to quality of life? But what we're seeing is high levels of inflation, and what we have is a Congress that doesn't seem, they seem drunk on spending money.
Yeah. It's not theirs, so that's why
it's not theirs, so they can do that.
Yeah. Well, you look at the example about the debt part. You look at, like, for example, student loans. I mean, the current generation, I don't see them how they can get out of that debt. Even though the government's been mentioning about, well, maybe we can do debt forgiveness, student loan forgiveness, but that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Yeah, lip service.
Lip service, hot
that's
air.
That's all it is.
And,
so.
And they say, well, we'll think about it. Well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It means I personally read that as we're going to not take any action on it, and we're going to have these students pay back the loan at a high interest rate because the government can use those billions of dollars to do something else with.
Well, can we use the term wasted?
Oh, I would certainly use that.
Well, it is, because that's how it is. So it becomes the idea of, just for you to understand how much lobbying can have an impact on your daily life, you know. When we go buy some product somewhere at Target or Walmart or Home Depot, whatever, some of that, yes, it's supply and demand. We understand all that. But there is also the lobbying part that comes of that. I look at it, for example, in the example of agricultural lobbying.
Oh, my God.
As an example.
And have we seen something major happen there?
Yeah.
If you watch the price of meat go up, there's a reason.
There's a reason for it.
Because 8 major meat processing companies bought up all the capacity for processing meat. Guess what they're doing? They're putting their hands together and say, well, how much should we charge? You think it's going to be less because it's more efficient?
No.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So you're going to see meat prices increase based on the fact that it's bordering on a monopoly.
Exactly. The other example will be, for example, lobbyists for the energy. You know, that's another factor, because I'm sure you've been watching the gas prices going up, whatever part of the world you're in. So the lobbyists for energy, it's not new. It's been,
no, it's not new.
And even within the government, this is where that lobbying comes in, as far as its objective is to influence government policies or government decisions regarding whatever issue they are lobbying for.
You know, you and we did a show, I can't remember, about 2 months ago, where we broke down how much influence does the average American have on policy and laws in the legislature in Washington, D.C. Do remember what the number was?
No.
1%.
Oh, my God.
99% of the influence was lobbyists, other government officials who had some stake in it, and, oh, darn, what was the third? Sorry.
Whatever. Yeah.
But for 99% of this to be actually in the hands of other than us, we the people, it tells you.
Yeah, right. And this is where that becomes that idea of, okay, where do you draw the line as far as those who argue that lobbying can be perceived as a form of a freedom of speech? Yes, to a degree. But when you have money that starts controlling the process that lobbyists are using, that becomes a different ballgame, because not all of us are millionaires. Not all of us can have that kind of influence.
Right.
So, and it becomes upon the representatives that we elect somehow to sort of pursue our interest, not theirs, not the lobbyists. And this is where the disconnect is.
Oh, yeah. You know, and something that isn't transparent is, what are all the extra benefits that the legislator gets from the lobbyists? I happen to have some firsthand experience with this.
Yeah.
And without going into details, what I got to see is all sorts of perks that legislators or people in power got for cooperating that never hit books. Special trips, special gifts, on and on and on. And they're really good at covering it.
Yeah, because the system allows for that, Ross. That's how they end up doing this one. But what is the average citizen to do? You know, that his or her interests are put in the back burner because...
1%.
Yeah, because that's... And this is why the reason why we wanted to talk about lobbying, because a lot of Americans do not understand the political process, how it works for that process to impact policies, which impacts them, impacts you in this case, impacts me, Ross, all of us. You know, this is not about just, this is us, all of us. Lobbyists, as we said earlier at the beginning, they are very knowledgeable individuals. They understand.
They're paid very well, for one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, remarkable amounts of money. They're very well educated. They have great experience. They have great relationships. And they make things happen. They even produce the legislation and hand it to the legislator.
Actually, they do contribute to writing the legislator. I'm very aware of that. Very, very. As a matter of fact, he used to be an individual, without naming names here, a member of the Senate, and lost the re-election a couple of years ago. And the next day, his next job was in Wall Street.
So, I'm so surprised.
It's sad to see, but hey, more power to him. He can do whatever. But it's just the big picture. The big picture into all this is understanding that how now our political process has been truly, truly managed, organized, directed by what the lobbyists want. You know? And this is where, again, I find myself looking at the logic of why we need to have term limits.
You know, doing a deep dive into what some of these lobbying organizations have to offer, they are amazingly sophisticated.
Yeah.
Like, they'll have 20 categories where they say, okay, we've got these 20 categories, we'll make it happen for you. And what it does say, if you pay us enough money. I'm going, wow. I was really impressed with the quality of their staff, the deep experience and expertise that they had in all of these fields, you know, all the way from military to agriculture, everything in between. Could think of.
Yeah. Well, you know, the main ones are within the military apparatus, the pharmaceutical, the medical.
Am I allowed to say the top two?
Yes.
Well, here, Facebook is the number one.
That's one, yes.
Amazon is number two.
Wow.
Does that tell you?
Yeah, and this is just an example of the big tech. Then you get the medical aspects of it, which is, we all know, the pharmaceutical industry. It's a big industry, billions and billions of dollars. And so we might need to do a specific show on that one elsewhere.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, We're going to do one. You have a lot of knowledge on that, Ross.
Oh, boy, do I ever.
Yes. Yeah. How about if we do that for our members?
Let's do it for our members.
Yeah.
Right. Because we provide really the specifics of how it operates and how it impacts their lives.
Yeah, that would be a good topic. I'm sure they will appreciate that understanding and that knowledge. So the big picture of all this is that the idea of lobbying has become, it's more prevalent, becoming part of the political makeup of the American political system, that is. And as we said earlier at the beginning, the impact is not only here, the impact is also overseas.
It's everywhere.
Everywhere. So, and that gives you an idea right there about the magnitude and the influence lobbyists have gained over the years.
So there's a question here.
Yeah.
And that is, how do these lobbyists serve the best interest of the American people, or do they? And I think what we're inviting our audience to do is take a deep dive into this and take a look at it. Because it impacts every part of every day of your life, what they're up to.
Exactly. And it's only getting more complicated given how. And now you take into consideration the changes on the global stage, what's taking place. You're going to see the role for lobbying more. They'll exert more influence beyond what they are.
You know, one of the considerations is there are certain lobbying groups that might lead us to a war. And what would the consequence of that be?
Yeah,
too catastrophic to think about.
Let's hope not. Let's hope not. Anything to add, Ross, before we close in here?
I think we pretty well touched the surface of a very important topic that we might do a deeper dive in a little later on another platform.
Exactly. So, well, we hope you find this information very useful, and we look forward to seeing you next time. As always, guys, stay informed. Till next time. Bye-bye.